Coming up this week in computer hardware, we talk iPhone 7, AirPods, benchmarks for AMD's Zen CPU, new PlayStation smartwatches, Sony's 23-megapixel phone camera, and Logitech's Pop Home Switch. All that and more coming up next on Twitch.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twitch.
Bandwidth for Twitch is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Twitch This Week in Computer Hardware, episode 380, recorded September 8th, 2016. How about that iPhone 7, people?
This episode of This Week in Computer Hardware is brought to you by Tracker. Tracker makes losing things a thing of the past. Pair Tracker to your smartphone, attach it to any item, and find its precise location with a tap of a button. Visit thetracker.com right now and enter promo code TWITCH for 30% off your entire order. And by Automatic, a small adapter that turns your clunker into a smarter, connected car. For more information on their brand new Automatic Pro adapter, visit automatic.com/twit. And enter the limited time offer code TWIT for $20 off the new device.
Welcome to Twitch This Week in Computer Hardware, Twitch weekly show that aims to bring you the most useful, most informative, most engaging, and yes, most reliable commentary, insight, benchmarking, analysis, and buying advice on computer and mobile hardware. And ZOMG people, there is a lot. It's like CES levels of news this week between the tail end of the... It's crazy, right? Between the tail end of IFA, which is the German CES, the Apple announcement, the PlayStation announcement, and then, of course, some interesting news coming up with some ideas on what the AMD Zen performance is going to be. Oh, and some sundry minor hardware announcements that fell during this time, much to the misfortune of various PR people everywhere, because, you know, oh my goodness, between PlayStation going 4K and Apple dropping the headphone jack and putting some really interesting cameras in the new iPhone 7, so much going on. Apple iPhone 7, yes, the headphone jack is gone. We'll get into that in a minute. But the biggest thing is really interesting new processor, some really interesting new camera, two cameras in the Plus. Which allows them to put a wide angle lens and a telephoto lens. And when I say telephoto, we're not talking about, you know, 1,000 millimeters, but a 2X lens. So they essentially have a wide X lens. And then if you look at the demo on Apple's website, you know, it kind of goes from like, okay, there's a person and there's a person. And then it'll go up to digital, like up to a 10X digital zoom. I generally despise digital zoom because traditionally digital zoom makes the pixels bigger and your photo starts to look atrocious. But you know, one of the big things that came out of Apple's presentation yesterday was their discussion of their what apparently is the most fabulous you know, I don't want to call it a DSP because, you know, they were trying to make it sound like it's somewhat slightly more complicated than the average GPU this day these days, but you know, they're built in their custom image processor that they're putting into the iPhone 7. So, boy, oh boy. And that's not even getting into, oh yeah, there's the Watch Series 2, and Nintendo is dropping the first Mario game. You know, you can play with one hand, which just sounds so rude every time I say it out loud.
It does. Yeah.
They're dropping it first on iOS, so I assume a check was cut because it's going to show up. Super Mario Run's going to show up on iOS, and it's going to show up on Android. Pokemon Go is coming to the Watch. You know, man. So let me dial back my franticness for a moment. So, you know, the 12 megapixel camera. Optical image stabilization on board. You know, they got the aperture down to f1.8, which means it's going to be a fantastic dark environment phone. They basically, they went with a 12 megapixel sensor. Bigger pixels means capturing more light. That's part of the reason why it's behaving, you know, like a decent camera lens. Six element lens. Apple says the new sensor is 60% faster and consumes 30% less energy, or is 30% more energy efficient than the sensor on the 6S. The 7 Plus, as I mentioned, gets a second 12-megapixel camera. So it's essentially a 28-millimeter lens and a 56-millimeter telephoto lens. Now, obviously, we wouldn't really consider a 56-millimeter lens telephoto, but in the case of your phone, it'll do. You know, the image signal processor is, I'm really curious to see what that does with the digital zoom. I'm really curious that, you know, they're basically saying they can process, they went through this detailed explanation of all the awesomeness that is going on in terms of, you know, focusing and color balancing and a wider color gamut. And, you know, they never really said high dynamic range, but they certainly implied, you know, that they were using the latest cinematic technologies inside of their quad LED true tone flash, which is apparently 50% brighter than the flash on the 6S. So between the fact that they have now the stupid bright flash, which is actually very smart, and a fairly low aperture, I'm really curious to see what low light or, you know, bar photography, portrait photography, the picture of the baby blowing out its first birthday candle. You know, and then the 7 Plus is going to be getting their new depth of field effect, which takes advantage of the DSP and the dual cameras to try to create sort of bokeh and to kind of synthesize the idea of, like, you know, okay, I'm a photographer. I want super low depth of field so that my person is in the frame and the stuff behind them is fuzzy and that looks really cool and bokeh is really cool. And they're going to simulate that with a software update on the Plus. Stereo speakers for the first time. And not stereo speakers on the bottom, but if you hold the phone in landscape mode, there's a stereo speaker to the left and the stereo speaker to the right, apparently twice as loud as the 6S. A lot going on. And that's not even getting into the processor, which the A10 Fusion processor, 4 cores, 2 are 40% faster than the A9 that came in the 6S, which are apparently twice as fast as the A8 processor in my iPhone 6. And then they have 2 additional cores that use, quote, 1/5 the battery life. So it'll assign different activities to different cores depending on what you're doing. You know, bumping graphics performance for gaming. You know, the battery life claims were compelling, if fantastically vague. They said it'll give you 2 more hours than a 6S, 1 hour more than a 6S Plus. And they're laying a lot of that at the feet of the fact that they could put a larger battery inside of it, in part because of the elimination of the headphone jack and rearranging the innards. Right. Of the iPhone 7. Oh, and I haven't even gotten into the fact that they now have the home button is now solid state. You know, it's got their Taptic system built into it, so it'll, you know, be buzzy, reacty, vibration-y.
I love that terminology for that. Solid state.
Yeah, I had a very interesting kind of 70s flashback. I mean, having sent out the picture of all the CB radios a couple weeks ago and the big, you know, fun pink fun fur line display case. You know, half of those probably had solid state written on them. And if you're not old enough to remember, or if you haven't spent a lot of time with vintage 70s and 60s electronics, solid state was when a company was trying to explain that there's no tubes in here. There's nothing that needs to be replaced. It's all, you know, transistors and resistors and capacitors and now, of course, integrated circuits, or in this case, unbelievably complicated and awesome home buttons. Really interesting article, John Pikowski, and if I'm not saying his name correctly, I would like to apologize because the dude's a really good writer. He had some pretty amazing access to what I will affectionately call key people inside of Apple. Wrote like a massive screed on sort of what's going on with the elimination of the headphone jack. And if you scroll down, you'll see sort of a headphone jack in an iPhone. And they got access to a whole bunch of people. And, you know, as Ryan and I point out, this is not the first phone to eliminate the headphone jack. There's a USB-C, you know, headphone jackish kind of phone that you can't buy because it's only available in China. Obviously, the new Moto X is dumping the headphone jack that happened a few weeks ago. But, This article kind of goes through the whole process of the engineering decisions that led to we can do all of these things if we get rid of the headphone jack. It's an interesting read if you really want to geek out. And what you just saw flashing by there was the AirPods. So the iPhone 7 is going to ship with Lightning EarPods, i.e. traditional crappy in-ear monitors from Apple, just with a Lightning connector. And those are their super awesome new AirPods. I hope these sound better than the traditional Apple earbuds, right? From an engineering standpoint, I am nervous, right? Because this is one of those things. For example, Apple, you know, if you have spent quality time with Apple products over the last decade, you may have noticed Apple kind of continually tries to redefine the mouse, and they usually do it in a way that makes it less useful and more complicated. Yep. Cue emails or tweets at Patrick Norton, at Ryan Shrout, discussing how we simply just don't have the appropriate fingers and or, you know, hand-eye coordination to make these advanced mice operate. But more often than not, I run into people who hate them to death and move away from them. So I say that because, you know, if you scroll down on the apple.com/AirPods webpage, you know, you have this wonderful side shot of a human with the AirPods stuffed into the side of their ear and the long, oh, that's the case. So these are completely wireless. You charge them by putting them in the case, and you'll notice there's a really long stick hanging off that. So you bury the EarPod in your ear. I'm assuming it's a yank on your earlobe and twist that thing into place, because I really, at $159 a pair, do not want them to fall out and bounce down the street and get stepped on by the, you know, whoever's behind me, you know, or get lost on the ferry or wherever you are, bounce down to a drain while you're jogging.
That sounds awful.
It sounds awful, right? But it's one of the things I liked about that BuzzFeed article that Pekowski put together is he covered a bunch of stuff that they're not really revealing on the web page, at least as of yesterday or last night, and they didn't discuss in the event. So the big thing, they were like, 5 hours of battery life, which to me is not a lot.
No.
And I may be an extreme user. But the case will enable 24 hours of charging. What they didn't talk about was the recharge time. So according to Pekowski's article, when you put the AirPods, so many clever names, the AirPods magnetically snap into place in the case and start charging. So in 15 minutes, you'll get a 3-hour charge out of them. So you're not going to have to like carry two sets of AirPods if you're flying cross country. Although if you'll notice on that shot of the side of the person, there's a vent on the back of the phone, which always makes me think to, you know, they may be doing that to enhance the sort of sound staging and the audio effects. They may be doing that to do some of the unbelievably sophisticated stuff they're doing inside of there. And I say sophisticated stuff because, they're using the W1 processors they built for that, which is essentially, Bluetooth. The chip is doing Bluetooth wireless. They're claiming it's going to improve sound. Obviously, it's going to be the digital analog converter, the amplifier for the speaker. And then they're actually doing beamforming on the microphones to improve the microphone performance. A voice accelerometer recognizes when you're speaking and works with a pair of beamforming microphones to filter out external noise and focus on the sound of your voice. There's basically infrared optical sensors to know that when they're stuffed into your ears, so they stop when you pull them out and save battery life or start playing. Here it is. I couldn't find it yesterday, but 15 minutes of charging equals 3 hours of battery life. I hope they sound good because they're $159. They're obviously, you know, kind of Apple's, you know, you could say Apple's like, you know, well, we really needed to eliminate that big old air-filled headphone jack so we could finally get IP67. Except, you know, Samsung did that with the Galaxy S5 years ago. So it's not like IP67. Which sounds really impressive, like it's mil-spec, right? Well, it basically means it's dust-proof and that you can drop it in water, 1 meter for up to 30 minutes without ruining the device. One of the big questions we were talking about yesterday is the fact that you can't use a Lightning adapter. By the way, there's a Lightning to earphone jack, 3.5-millimeter jack, that's going to be in the box, which I think is a very wise move.
Replacement.
Yeah,
if they didn't do that, oof.
I don't know if they're doing analog over the Lightning Jack or if the DAC is inside of the Lightning Jack. I'll probably buy one and cut it open as soon as they're available just because I'm me. Belkin, props to Belkin and thanks to Mac Rumors for the heads up on this. Belkin is going to have a Lightning audio adapter that enables simultaneous listening and charging. And, you know, maybe this doesn't sound compelling to you, but it sounds freaking awesome to me. The Lightning Audio Plus Charge Rockstar for the iPhone 7 and 7 Plus is going to be $40. So, you know, ouch. You hate that it exists, but hey, you know, if you want to listen and you don't want to pay $159 for AirPods, or by the way, that W1 processor that enables the AirPods is going to be available in Beats headphones. Big shock there. You know, they will still work with other brands of Bluetooth headphones, which is a positive thing. I'm curious. I'm really curious to hear the AirPods. I will not have much of an opinion on them until I hear them and find out whether or not they fall out of my ears, because that was my big issue, along with the atrocious sound quality with the earbuds that Apple puts in the box with the iPhones. Man, Apple Watch Series 2. Are you excited about all the watches that came out between IFA and the Watch Series 2?
I don't know, right? So I still am using a Pebble Time. I used Android Watch before that. I kind of decided that I'm going to try the Apple Watch this time. I'm going to buy the cheapest version of the Series 2 that they announced and give that a shot, because I've never actually used one of the Apple Watches before, right, more than just like demoing it at an event or something like that.
Sure.
I don't know. They still don't, to me, don't do anything that's like super compelling that I think I would recommend a lot of people get. What I am to the point of is now the Pebble that I have doesn't have the functionality with the iPhone that it did with the Android devices that I had before. And so I'm kind of just like, maybe I'm missing out on the train here, of the wearable devices, because I'm using one on an ecosystem that isn't really adaptable to other external devices, right? So let's give the Apple one a try. It's stupid expensive. You know, I think the cheapest one I can get, you know, in the larger size is $399, which is pricey for sure. But they did a couple of things, like the built-in GPS change, the waterproofness change, and the 1,000-nit screen.
Yeah, that the 1,000-nit screen was a really, really, really big deal to me, right? That's twice as bright as the original Apple Watch. I mean, the biggest challenge for the Apple Watch is waiting for Watch OS 3, which should make the watch usable. I'm not a huge fan of the current watch operating system, very excited to see it seems like a lot of the issues and performance improvements will be found in Watch OS 3, right? So, yeah, 50% faster on the processor. The double brightness on the screen is a big deal. You know, I was kind of laughing, at their description of the 50-meter water-resistant water resistance 50 meters, which is one of the most awkward sentences I've ever seen on a website or in a press release. But, you know, it's also really hard to say, well, you know, the Apple Watch Series 2 is, you know, horology ISO standard 22810:2010, which nobody knows about unless you're a watch nerd. But it basically means you can swim in a pool or the ocean. But quote, scuba diving, water skiing, or other activities involving high-velocity water or submersion below shallow depth is not acceptable. So the big deal, though, is between the GPS, which will allow you to do GPS data tracking or movement data tracking without having to carry your iPhone with you, which is a big deal for people I know who are serious fitness enthusiasts, and the fact that it will now, you know, count your laps, count your strokes when you're swimming and won't disintegrate upon contact with water is a big deal. Dual core processor is nice. What they're now calling the Apple Watch Series 1, which is the old Apple Watch, will get the better graphics and processor performance, which I think will be nice. It was crazy at IFA. At IFA there were a whole bunch of watch announcements. We'll talk about those in a couple minutes, but it was interesting. You know, when you're thinking about, Apple's approach, where they're like, you know, we're advancing the species. They said there it was courage. Apple had the courage to eliminate the headphone jack, which apparently means Motorola had the courage and a Chinese cell phone company you don't know had the courage. You know, but Apple certainly is willing to walk away from the headphone jack. I'm sure we're going to see a lot fewer headphone jacks, you know, next year. But at the same time they were doing that, LG dropped one of the, what I think is one of the most exciting Android phones I've heard of in a while, obviously because I'm an audio geek. But they took a nice write-up by Chris Welch on The Verge. You know, they've created, it's going to be Nougat powered. You know, it's going to be sort of a premier, cell phone, you know, kind of right up there with the G5, you know, mil standard 810G drop and shock resistance, which means it shouldn't disintegrate the first time you drop it. I'm not going to say anything about the second, you know, QHD 5.7 inch display. So it's, you know, right on the borderline of being a phablet, but what's, you know, Snapdragon 820 processor, 4 gigs of RAM, 64 gigabytes of storage, and support for up to 2 terabyte micro SD cards. You know, so, what's kind of crazy about this is they put a pretty sophisticated ESS Saber DAC inside of it. And ESS Saber DACs are audiophile quality. They're fantastic digital analog converters. AudioQuest uses them. A whole bunch of other companies use them inside of really beautiful gear to feed audio to your headphones. So assuming they, you know, they you know, the quad DAC essentially means they're splitting multiple DACs across the frequencies. You know, the it looks like they probably have a decent headphone amp inside of there, 72-stage volume control, you know, support for, you know, lossless audio formats. I don't see anything on whether or not they're supporting HD on there. You know, but they did that, you know, and a decent 16-megapixel, you know, f1.8, again, the number we heard in the Apple iPhone 7.
Right.
You know, and a lot of work on video capture, Qualcomm SteadyRecord 2.0, which basically takes information from the gyroscope to help do image stabilization. I'm really curious to see this. I don't think it's going to be cheap. I don't think there's any pricing available on it yet. But, you know, it's a very, you know, you could argue that it is much harder for an Android phone company to make money than it is for Apple to make money. But I thought it was interesting to see them be like, hey, we're going to make a fantastic phone that's going to make your headphones sound amazing. And we're not going to, you know, make you buy an extra $100 back for that. We're not going to do a bunch of crazy stuff. You know, it's interesting, right? You know, hi-fi recording, some decent audio, like 24-bit audio recording, apparently. A very different... device, a very different series of decisions on that device. Man, Sony announced at IFA the Xperia XZ, which is kind of crazy in that they put a 23-megapixel camera inside of it, 5-axis image stabilization. You know, like so many things Android, it's USB Type-C. But they went with a 1080p screen, which I think is a great decision for battery life. 1080p, 5.2-inch screen. Again, another Snapdragon 820 processor. You know, you can kind of pre-register for news on that. And they did a compact version of it that has a 4.6-inch 720p screen, so significantly smaller, but with the same 23-megapixel camera and fingerprint sensor. And given the work Sony's been doing with their high-end image sensors, yeah, I'm assuming the people that make the image sensors for Sony's cameras are helping out the phone people. That has the potential to be an utterly ridiculous camera. I don't know. I'm very curious to see what images from all these phones look like in the hands of real people. Mentioned USB Type-C. USB Type-C to HDMI is coming soon. Jeremy wrote that up for PCPer.com. But essentially, you know, the HDMI licensing group is going to allow a simple, easy to use, thank you, USB Type-C to HDMI cable for all of you out there who are not Robert Heron, who want to connect your phone to your TV. It's not a long list. You know, but there are certainly some people out there that do this or want to do this. And then it looks like Nexuses are dead. And Boy Genius Report did an article on this. along with lots and lots of other places. But apparently the Nexus phones are now going to be Pixel phones. And we'll have a new version of Android that nobody else has. Android 7.1. So we don't really know much of anything about that.
I like the Nexus brand.
Yeah, I think it's... I'm very, 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 very curious because the Nexus, you know, I know a lot of people who are incredibly loyal to the Nexus brand, not just because the hardware has often been a value, an incredible value for what you pay for it, but because it's a pure Android experience. And everybody wants to cruft up Android and make their phone cooler. And more often than not, they make their phone, you know, less fast and more difficult to function and more difficult to transfer off of. But I think it's going to be... it's going to be interesting to see what the new Pixel phones look like. So we wait with bated breath.
Indeed.
Oh, my goodness. So much more to talk about, some of which even involves computer hardware, people. But right now, though, we want to thank our friends over at Tracker. This episode of This Week in Computer Hardware is brought to you by Tracker. Smart cars, smartphones, smart homes. Technology is making everything smart, even, ladies and gentlemen, switches and light bulbs. But losing your possessions can make even smart people feel less than smart. Tracker makes losing things a thing of the past. It's really cool, right? It's the size of a little bigger than a quarter. It makes it easy to locate your misplaced keys or maybe your spouse's misplaced keys, wallets, backpacks, bicycles, computers, even pets. You basically attach the tracker. First you pair the tracker to your smartphone, right? If you can press a button, you can pair the tracker. Your phone can track up to 10 devices at once. Tracker is Bluetooth LE, so the battery should last up to a year. You can customize, this is one of my favorite parts, two-way separation alerts, so that if you walk away from your keys or you walk away from your backpack or perhaps someone tries to make your backpack walk away from you, it'll set off an alarm, and you can immediately realize that something's missing, go into panic mode, and find it. If you lose your phone, press the tracker button, say, on your keychain, and your phone's going to ring even if it's on silent. I work with an individual that constantly misplaces their phone and handed them a tracker, and now they click, and the phone sings out. It's pretty smart. There's over 1.5 million devices Tracker has out there in the world. That means they've got the largest crowd GPS network in the world, so your lost item can show up on a map even if it's miles away. The Tracker app records your lost item's last location, and when another Tracker user comes within 100-foot range of your item, you'll receive a GPS update of your item's location. Tracker Alice works either Tracker Bravo or third-party Bluetooth tracker to pinpoint your items on a customizable floor plan of your home. Just ask Tracker Atlas where your item is, and you will instantly get an answer. There's no need to search. If you find yourself compelled by this, if you are tired of losing things, look at all those trackers. Go to thetrackr.com and never lose your possessions again. Plus, just for our audience, if you enter in the promo code TWICH, that's TWICH, you'll get 30% off your entire order. That's THETRACKR.com, promo code TWICH, and get 30% off your entire tracker order. That is a big deal, people. And we want to thank Tracker for their support of This Week in Computer Hardware. Oh my goodness. New PlayStations. New Xboxes, now new PlayStations. Yep. Crazily enough, not long after Apple's event ended, Sony fired up their events. Like the Xbox One, the PlayStation Slim is the same hardware in a smaller, cheaper package. The One S added HDR, 4K Blu-ray, 4K streaming video, up to 2 terabyte hard drives. In this case, the Slim is slimmer. I hate to sound silly when I say that, but it's pretty cool, actually. If you are looking to replace your PlayStation, or if you've been on the fence with a PlayStation 4, the other thing that they, not only is it smaller, but apparently more energy efficient. 30% smaller, power consumption is down 28%. So right. Obviously this is one of those classic mid-console lifestyle, parts count reduction, shrinkification kind of thing. But the big deal is probably the PlayStation 4 Pro. Which is getting the 4K gaming on. They claim they've doubled the GPU performance. And I was thinking of you when I was reading this yesterday, because all I could think was, okay, you know, Sony's quote, games that already look extraordinary on PS4 will look richer and more detailed thanks to more powerful GPU and a faster CPU at the heart of PlayStation 4. And all I could think is, like, I'm stoked about 4K and high dynamic range. But yeah. I can't believe they actually – I couldn't believe that the processor inside the PlayStation, like, just doubling it didn't seem like it would be enough to do decent 4K gaming.
No. No, it's absolutely not, right? So I think the GPU performance is like 2.3x on this. The CPU performance is essentially the same. This will be out in November, I think, so relatively soon. Yes.
Slim comes out September 15th. It's $299. Okay. Yeah, and the Pro is going to beat Project Scorpio out by – probably
by
6 months. $399 on November 10th, just in time for Black Friday.
Now what's interesting is that it is, so it's 4.2 teraflops or so, which is essentially identical to like the Polaris 11 GPU. That's, I think, the RX 460 is the model branding for that. And it's kind of what AMD has stated before as like one of the key inflection points for GPU performance. So it's not a it's not a coincidence that Sony's releasing it at that. And you're right, 4K gaming at that performance is not. You'll be able to do native 4K gaming with some simplistic gaming and animation and graphics, but you're not going to do, you know, Tomb Raider, Rise of the Tomb Raider, or GTA 5 level graphics at 4K. I mean, hell, we struggle to do that on the PC with GTX 1080s still today. So what you're going to see, you know, instead is rendering at 1080p and upscaling it to 4K to output to your display, which is fine. I mean, and you already see some of the consoles do that, right? You know, rendering at slightly lower than 1080p on the PS4 and Xbox One today and upscaling it to 1080p. And when you're doing 1080p to 4K, it's you know, simple multiplication of four there. So it's pretty easy to do. But it will do like the 4K video streaming. So Netflix and that type of stuff. One interesting thing, and I did just look this up to be sure, this does not have a 4K Blu-ray player built into it.
Really? The Pro does not?
The Pro does not. Wow. But the Xbox One S that came out like a month ago does. And so you assume Scorpio will have one, obviously, as well. And the Xbox One S sells for $299 today for the 2 terabyte model. And this will be $399. When it launches in November. It's really surprising to me that Sony would not include a 4K Blu-ray player in its own device. Remember back when PlayStation 3 launched, it was like the Blu-ray player to have, right? And it helped push the standard onto the market, helped sell PlayStations, helped sell you know, higher HD TVs and all that type of stuff. So I'm really shocked that that would be the case.
Maybe they're trying to push everybody to their 4K streaming service.
God, I hope not.
I hope
maybe
not either,
but you know, it's an odd omission, and it will be interesting to see how this affects the PSVR, which comes out in October, I think October 13th. So we're just over a month away from when the PSVR launches, and you know, that works with the previous PlayStation 4 and with the PS4 Pro. So, like, what the differences will be there. I think they claim either better resolution or better frame rates, depending on what, you know, I guess the need of the developer is at that particular time. So I'm very curious to pick one of these up and see kind of what the differences are. And if a 2X performance delta is enough for general consumers to notice a difference, right? That to me is very interesting. The Scorpio is going to be a significant jump over the Xbox One S, like, you know, another multiple over what this the PS4 Pro is. So, you know,
I mean,
that
was
you're
one of the interesting
things to see a difference.
I mean, Sony went into great pains to be like, there's not going to be any exclusive 4K content. Everything's going to work on everything, which on one hand is good, but on the other hand, you know, are they really, you know, is it, you know, is it 3.5K, 3K-ish.
Right.
Like, you know, is that a rude thing to say?
No. There's a whole lot of questions that go with this. And again, we've never seen this cadence of product releases on the console side. So usually when we talk about like console-to-console compatibility, it's like backwards compatibility. Well, this old game work on my new system?
Right.
Not the idea of these are all the same platform. which is what Sony is pushing with the PS4 and what Xbox will be pushing with the Scorpio device too. So interesting to see, but I'm glad. Like the more improvements we see in the console space in terms of hardware, I think the faster you'll see things change software-wise in the PC side. So I'm all for it, just as long as they can keep selling them, I guess.
He's all for it, people. You heard it here first. Oh, my goodness. And I just want to say PlayStation VR has so much potential. Just wanted to say that. Yep. Oh, software update is going to bring HDR support to all PlayStation 4s. But the Pro doesn't have a Blu-ray player.
Doesn't have a 4K Blu-ray. It has Blu-ray.
Oh.
But it doesn't have the 4K Blu-ray player.
I find it difficult to believe that they wouldn't put UHD.
I agree. I don't know. Now that I, and actually, honestly, I didn't even realize the Xbox One S had a 4K Blu-ray player in it. Now I'm actually going to take it home and install it. I'm probably going to stop at Best Buy on the way home and pick up HD Blu-ray. I don't know which one to get, but I got to pick something.
I think all the Avenger movies are out on Blu-ray. Yeah. Those are always good. X-Men Apocalypse. Yeah, that's just... Yeah, it just seems like an unfortunate decision.
Yep, agreed.
Angry Birds movie. 4K UHD Blu-ray.
That's the one. That's what I'm going to pick. I'm going to go get the Angry Birds movie and test out my 4K Blu-ray player.
I got to say, you know, Robert and I have been talking about the UHD releases on AVXL, and we've been laughing because it's like, okay, the Angry Birds movie is on 4K, you know, UHD Blu-ray, The Huntsman, Lucy, which I actually really enjoyed. Now You See Me 2 on UHD, Snow White and The Huntsman on UHD.
Warcraft movie.
I kind of liked Oblivion. You know, I don't know if I like it enough to spend $40 on the Blu-ray for it. Yep. Oh, there's a 4K Blu-ray 30th anniversary edition of Labyrinth. Okay, that's awesome.
Yeah, I don't think I want that to be my first one. Yeah.
Not buying into it, huh?
Oh, wow. I want something that's like new and crisp and sharp, right? That's what I want. I don't know. We'll
see. Haters gonna hate, man. Well, you know, there's that I can't say it with a straight face. The Angry Birds movie.
It will be very crisp.
Tarzan. Tarzan's available. Oh, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
I haven't seen Captain America: Civil War. Maybe that will be the one. That seems like
that would be the one. X-Men Apocalypse. Civil War is on pre-order.
Oh, is it
online so far? Damn. So, yeah. Well, how about the most popular 4K movies on Blu-ray.com? Deadpool, X-Men Apocalypse, Angry Birds, X-Men Apocalypse, Deadpool, Huntsman, Labyrinth, The Revenant. Probably not something you're going to enjoy. You're certainly not going to watch it a second time.
See, I would get like IMAX Extreme Adventure Collection 4K.
Which is pretty good. I've also, having been trapped in a room with Robert Herron doing UHD television testing, Mad Max Fury Road 4K is very nice.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
You know, the Star Trek movies the Star Trek movies are on 4K. The Watchmen is on 4K now, UHD 4K. The Martian. I'll stop now.
All right. Yeah.
I can do this all day long. Fitbit, and that's the Flex 2 and the Flex Charge 2 at IFA. Flex 2 now uses 4 color LEDs, not a display. It'll send notifications to your smartphone. The Charge 2, they've quintupled the size of the display, and the pure pulse heart monitoring is standard. There's basically like one model of the Charge 2. There's not multiple charge models, and the usual activity tracking and stuff. A bunch of mid-range phones were announced at IFA, but we're not going to get into those right now, unless you wail on us and say we have to cover those, in which case we will.
Nice.
Asus ZenWatch, Samsung Gear S3. It's an odd choice with the Gear S3, because they did a classic and a Frontier version, you know, and, you know, Samsung Tizen-based wearable OS 2.3.2. They're claiming 4 days of battery life, which seems kind of incredible. You know, I do really like the whole twisting the bezel control. They're IP68 waterproof. They use standard 22-millimeter watch bands, which is great if you don't want to pay, like, $50 for a $2 watch band. Apple. You know, but it's funny, like, they're pitching the Frontier for active folks, but it's not like it's a bigger watch. It's the exact same watch. With the exact same dual core 1 gigahertz processor, like, you know, 768 megabytes of RAM, 4 gigs of storage. But in some countries, the Frontier will get LTE 3G. Okay. But I thought it was kind of odd that they had these two watches with the same spec. And Asus announced the Zen Watch 3, which sounds interesting, except there's like almost no specs other than it's Android Wear and it's cold forged steel that's 82% stronger than their stainless competitors. So, you know, if you think you're going to be, you know, trapped in the wilderness hammering in tent pegs with your smartwatch before it runs out of battery life, you may want to take a closer look at the Asus Zen Watch 3.
Yeah.
You have a car, right?
I do. I drive a car.
You do? You drive a car?
Yeah.
Cars are good. If you've been wondering how to take advantage of that OBD2 jack that's hidden, you may have never even seen it, but your car has one if it was built after 1996. And I'm bringing that up because this episode of This Week in Computer Hardware is brought to you by Automatic. It's a little adapter, a small adapter that turns your clunker into a smarter connected car. Automatic has just launched Automatic Pro, their new unlimited 3G car adapter with no monthly fees or subscription. Always there. 3G lets you know where your vehicle is parked at any time or lets you track your vehicle even if you're not with it. Children driving. New drivers. It works with If This Then That for endless customization, connecting your car to the rest of your life. And you can easily file business expenses with popular apps like Concur and Expensify. You can even link your car to a Nest thermostat or Amazon Echo. Imagine it. Alexa, where did I park my car? Yeah, you can do that. Sounds good, doesn't it? You can get human help in a crash, too. Automatic Pro detects severe accidents and trained responders call for help when you can't. Automatic works on nearly every car made after 1996. It takes just minutes to connect your car to your iPhone or Android device via Bluetooth. It even integrates with Apple Watch and Pebble. So if you haven't played around with an automatic in your car, you might want to think about it. It's interesting stuff. And I'm kind of fascinated by the fact that you can now integrate it with Hue or Nest or Amazon Echo and start, you know, linking it to your automated home.
Yeah.
Automatic Pro is normally $129.95, but when you use our exclusive offer code TWIT, that's TWIT, you'll save $20. Visit automatic.com/TWIT for more information. Use the offer code TWIT to save $20 off on the regular purchase price. That's automatic.com/TWIT. We want to thank them for their support of This Week in Computer Hardware.
Definitely.
So you may remember that we usually talk about computer hardware somewhere in the show. This has obviously been a mobile and console heavy show, yep. And some of you have probably been staring at your MP3 player in your dashboard. Remember MP3 players? Those are going to be big. Those are going
to
be really
Diamond Rio. Diamond Rio is the one to get.
Well, I've got an Astell and Kern and a Fio dedicated audio player stuffed full of FLAC files. They both support HD audio, you know, in my bag over here. So I am ready to be able to use my awesome headphones in a world that no longer has headphone jacks. But bringing it back to computers, because this is a show about computer hardware, This Week in Computer Hardware, you got Geekbench leaked results, and they have extrapolated AMD's Zen performance. And this is a big deal. If you missed us talking about it a couple weeks ago, AMD Zen processors scooching back towards Intel's level of CPU performance. What's the word, man?
So, yeah, if you remember back a couple weeks ago, AMD showed basically a single benchmark running Blender, and they were basically running a Broadwell 8-core processor and a Zen 8-core processor, and they were basically matched in performance. They were trying to demonstrate the IPC improvements that they've made. So what happened was, is over the holiday weekend here in the U.S., a Geekbench score kind of leaked out. A Geekbench kind of just kind out. Of, it, well, so, like, yeah, it leaked
sort
out.
Of pregnant?
It's a yeah, explaining that to your parents, right? It's synthetic tests that run through a bunch of different algorithms for different things, for compression, for encryption, image manipulation, whatever, and it generates kind of scores, right? And they released a result that had a single core and multi-core performance, but it was only running at 1.44 gigahertz, so very low, you know, early prototype processor being run. And because of the complication of, you don't know if this was a two-socket system, is the communication between the two processors running at full speed? There's a lot of question marks that come into that. So I really just looked at single-threaded results. And then what I wanted to do was, obviously, 1.44 gigahertz is pretty low. So we basically assumed perfect scaling on performance and did a multiply to get up to 3.6 gigahertz. And then, you know, you look at the score. So if you look at these benchmark graphs on the story at PCPro.com, you'll see three lines. The light green line in the middle is the actual score from Geekbench for the 1.44 gigahertz Zen part. And then the dark green part is the extrapolated result at 3.6 gigahertz. And there are some, you know, issues with that when you go into the second graph where there's some memory results that obviously won't scale that well. The blue line is another Geekbench result for a Xeon processor that runs at 3.6 gigahertz. Interestingly enough, this is an Ivy Bridge architecture. So it's a little bit older in terms of the Intel architecture that we're looking at, right? Because it goes Ivy Bridge, then Haswell, Broadwell, Skylake, right? So there are some more IPC improvements that happen that way. And what you'll see is, out of maybe 16, 20 tests, there are two where the AMD processor legitimately looks like it will have better performance than the Xeon processor. That being said, the rest of them show anywhere from the Zen processor is running anywhere from 70 to 85% of the performance of the Ivy Bridge processor, which is better than they've ever been able to do in the past, probably, but not equal performance, right? It's not matching IPC to the most even to a several year old Intel architecture. So it leaves us with some questions, right? Are the numbers accurate? Is our extrapolation accurate? And for single threaded performance, multiplying by that frequency difference is a very reliable way to kind of guess performance scaling. That being said, there could be other things that are holding back AMD's processors. Maybe the motherboard that the processor is running on wasn't fully cache aware, and maybe it was missing out on some of that type of stuff. But if not, if this is what to expect, then it stands to reason that AMD's Zen processor could be at a significant disadvantage over, you know, where we'll be at. Skylake and Broadwell E will be the target competition against Zen when it comes out in the first quarter of next year. And that's going to be interesting, right? AMD kind of set the expectation with that blender test of we're going to be on equal footing. And it can't be, the answer can't be that we're only on equal footing with this one particular workload. It has to be over a general.
Could be the first time that's been done.
Exactly. When they show one benchmark, you always take it as a grain of salt. And we did that at the time. But it was really early in the development process. You never really know how things are going to work out. But if these results are accurate and if kind of our estimations are even close, they have the potential to be still 30 to 40% behind Skylake's IPC when it comes out. And to note, if these Zen numbers held up, the Zen processor would have to run at about 4.8 gigahertz to match the IPC of the 3.6 gigahertz Xeon Ivy Bridge part. So, and that's going to be a tough thing to do, right? 4.8 gigahertz, probably not something that's going to be achievable. I mean, maybe it will. I don't know what the process technology will be like and what the architecture actually allows. But that would be a tough nut to crack, if you will, to get to 4.8 gigahertz to have to match that. So there's, again, take all of this kind of discussion with a grain of salt. This is nowhere near finalized. We have a lot of time between now and November or January for things to change. Mm-hmm. But we don't have so much time that if these numbers are close to accurate, that I feel like AMD would actually be able to like turn a switch and make everything catch up. So it'll be interesting to see how, you know, if we start to see parts, leak out in the December timeframe, what we'll be able to show from it. I don't know.
Me neither. I'm very curious though. Do you think AMD is going to be, talking about this at CES or?
Yeah, I think for sure they'll have to, right? If not before that, right? They've their original target was the end of 2016. And I think their goal is still maybe to like just kind of like leak out reviews maybe before CES. And maybe like a handful of system builders will be able to build a handful of parts based on it, just so they can say they made that Q4 2016 mark. But I think the big push will be, you know, February, March timeframe of 2017.
Hmm. Oh, my goodness. We talked about a bunch of the more high-profile laptops that came out of IFA. The Yoga 2-in-1, which I can't wait to get a real-world test. I've had a chance to be hands-on and type on it on a couple different occasions, and the Halo keyboard is actually really impressive. We talked about the Acer's crazy 21-inch curved laptop, 17-pound lunchbox. But we had another Kaby Lake update. Razer updated the Blade and Blade Stealth laptops with Kaby Lake. So the regular model does Skylake and an NVIDIA GTX 1060. The Stealth is using the onboard Intel HD Graphics 620 instead of a discrete part. So that's pretty much what we've seen from most other vendors. Where it's the TDP is compatible and it uses the existing chipset as the Skylake, so just dropping in a new chip and going. And the core, what I like to think of as the lunchbox, is still running at $500, and you provide your own GPU on that. Logitech G, Prodigy mice, keyboard, and headset are targeting gamers who don't want to spend all of the money. This is actually the G213 Prodigy I'm holding right here. And it's a nice keyboard. It is a membrane keyboard. You can't really see it, but you'll notice the LEDs changing color. You can do all of the LEDs. You can do a sweep across the LEDs. You cannot individually program LEDs like we've seen on the mechanical chip keyboards. I'm actually ordering. There's a inexpensive $30 keyboard mouse combo that's very popular on Amazon that's for gamers, where it's another membrane keyboard. I want to compare that because, you know, this seems like, you know, I like the button designs. You know, I like the fact that there's a built-in, there's a built-in wrist rest on this, but it seems, you know, expensive for a membrane keyboard, $70. On the flip side, they also did the G231 Prodigy headset is $70, and the new mice, which they do a wireless and a wired version. And I got to say, I really like the mice. They're super simple. They reduce the number of buttons on them to make them somewhat more human-friendly. And those are selling for $70 or $69.99 a piece, too. You guys did a full review on those. You actually
review yet, but I basically just got them in right before we left for the holiday weekend as well. Right. And I spent, you know, 30 or 40 minutes with them. It seemed like... Yeah. Really good devices. I actually really like the feel of the mouse. They, you know, they mentioned that they kind of were going through that IntelliMouse design and feel.
I think that was a smart choice. There's a, you know, and also I got to say there's a 10 gram weight, and you basically press in here, and this little plastic lid is also the carrier for the weight, and snaps into place. And I should point out the G403 wired version is $69. The wireless version is $99. So, I like the mouse a lot more than I like the keyboard. The mouse I found really compelling. The keyboard, possibly because I've spent so much time on mechanical keyboards, is not nearly as fantastic to me. And the headset actually seems the G231 headset seems really nice too. Not wireless, but decent quality and makes it easy to, you know, they've set it up so you can bounce between your PlayStation, your Xbox, and your PC.
Right, it's analog, not USB.
Yeah.
It's definitely better audio quality than the two generations previous Logitech headsets, like the G930 and stuff. Probably not the same drivers that you see in the G933 or the G633. Right. Obviously for cost reasons, but it sounds pretty good. It's a little bit bass heavy based on my first listen to of it, which is pretty common in gaming headsets. Yeah. But again, another $69 product. But the mouse, the wired mouse, the keyboard, and the headset are all $69, which is pretty reasonable. It's not as dirt cheap as like the $30 monoprice or whatever that you can buy. So I'm curious to see kind of what the comparisons are like.
Yeah, I like I said, I'm going to order one of those inexpensive membrane keyboards that are sort of a brand you never heard of, but 23,000 incredibly positive reviews on Amazon. Another thing Logitech released a little bit earlier this summer is the Pop Home Switch. I reviewed that on Tech Thing this week, and I've kind of fell in love with this. So if you're, you know, one of the challenges of home automation or Internet of Things or whatever we're going to call it this week is that you often end up with multiple apps on your phone or, you know, awkwardly integrated services on your phone. Or if somebody wants to come to your house, you either have to help them hook up to your stuff or you have to have like, oh, there's a tablet we keep so people can operate all of our crazy home automated stuff, whether it's the blinds or the lights. And I dream of sure. Wireless motorized blinds. They are not inexpensive by my standards, but soon there will be some that are affordable and I will put them all over my house. But it's pretty crazy. The Pop Home Switch comes with two of these switches, and it comes with basically a Wi-Fi adapter. You plug the Wi-Fi adapter in the center of your house, load an app onto your phone, or I should say you load an app onto your phone with a standard Logi log on, like you'd use to do a Harmony remote. You plug this in, you hit a button on this, and there's three commands. There's one click, there's two clicks, and there's holding it down. And that allows you to do three different recipes, which can include light bulbs from several manufacturers. You can set it up so like I can walk into my house, click a button, the lights go on in the living room, the Sonos goes on all over the house playing my favorite playlist. You can use it to cue like I want to watch movies. I click twice and it does the entire configuration from a Harmony remote, for example. I read somebody's review on it where they had it set up so they have wireless control over their air conditioning and their Sonos, like, and their lights. So they would, like, it's time for bed, and they would hold the button down, and it would fire up the AC in their bedroom, you know, trim the lights right to the level they wanted and do all that other stuff. I just like it because it allows you to do things like, oh, you know, I need to control these blinds in this room when the babysitter's here, or I want to turn on every light in the house, or I want to, and you can do it without having to be like, my phone, I log into my phone, I go to the app, I wait for the app to open. You know, it's amazing how nice it is to just click once, twice, or three times and you throw up one of those recipes. I was really impressed. Not particularly inexpensive at $99, but they're expecting 5 years of battery life out of these. And the build quality looks pretty good. They have the, a whole bunch of colors. So you can have like different colors matching to your room. The batteries are replaceable, without using, an iFixit menu and several hours of spudgers and stuff. Good stuff. One last thought before we go. Logitech. Samsung has responded to the Galaxy Note 7 issue. Man, 35 reported cases of defective Galaxy Note 7 batteries. Basically, when they say defective, Scott wrote this up, and I thought it was very gracious of him to say defective. batteries bursting into flames definitely would be considered defective. As of September 1, 35 cases have been reported globally. They're going through their suppliers to try to figure out what happened to the batteries and what batteries are in the market. But they have stopped sales on the Galaxy Note 7, and they will voluntarily replace your device with a new one over the coming weeks. So they haven't done a full, like, Consumer Product Safety Commission recall, but they're blasting it out over the universe that, hey, we got to replace this. We got a problem here. So, sweet. Catching fire or exploding. So 35 cases confirmed. So, or 35 complaints have been confirmed. So we don't really know too much more about what's going on. So, oh my goodness. So yeah, if you have a Galaxy Note 7, you might not want to charge it in one of the more flammable, or carry it around in a more flammable pocket. Not a ton of information around them, what's happening on that. But yeah.
It's a pretty dramatic
explosion. Yeah. It will cost us so much, it makes my heart ache, President Ko Dong-jin says. He would be the president of Samsung.
Yeah.
Heart's aching, and Samsung's heart aches, and Apple has courage. Oh my goodness. 2.5 million Note 7s have already been sold globally. Estimated about 24 out of 1 million units may have a faulty battery. Guessing that's a supplier that they're not going to use in the future. So
probably not.
Yeah. I don't know. And I will say, teasing aside, props to Samsung for stepping up and being like, we're replacing them all. Mr. Ko says, quote, there was a tiny problem in the manufacturing process, so it was very difficult to figure out. So
it's what the complicated part for that is, like, how do you replace somebody's phone? Like, I mean, you've got to tell them to stop using it and send it in. And then what phone do they use in the interim? Right. Most people don't have just extra smartphones sitting around. Right. And the complication of moving between phones, like you just moved to that phone, got your app set up, got all your contacts set up and did all the things you need to do. Sounds like a pain in the ass. So I don't know. If I had one of those phones, I would probably take the risk and hold on to it until they had a replacement ready.
I'm sure a lot of people are.
Yeah.
It's only 24 in a million, man. What's the worst you can do?
Yeah, the chances are.
South Korean high school teacher Park Soo-jin says the Star.com said she'd rush to buy the new phone, pre-ordering and then activating it on August 19th, its official launch date. The 34-year-old living in the port city of Busan said that she was bruised when she rushed out of her bed after her phone burst into flames, filling her bedroom with smoke, stinking of chemicals. She's having second thoughts about buying another newly released device, especially after losing all her personal data stored in the destroyed Note 7. Which brings us back to one of my favorite things to say anywhere I go, back up your data. And if you haven't lately, back up your phone, just in case it bursts into flames tonight. Sleep
good
well.
Point. Good
point. Oh, my goodness. On that cheerful note, PCPer.com is a place to find Mr. Ryan Shrout, who is recovering from an excess of news this week, much like I am. You can find me at techthing.com or avxl.com, at Ryan Shrout or at Patrick Norton on Twitter. We want to thank you for listening to This Week in Computer Hardware. You can find more episodes of This Week in Computer Hardware at twit.tv/TWICH. We'd love it if you subscribed so you would make sure you got every single episode. Just use your favorite podcatcher. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm Patrick Norton.
I'm Ryan Shrout.
We'll see you next week on Twitch.